Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's that time again. K Son and Friends. I'm K Son, Eric, Citizen Payne. Today, what is today? Tuesday. Today might be Tuesday, y'all. Today is Wednesday. I'm just joshing with y'all. I knew what day it was. Just making sure you guys out there know what day it is. Once again, this is K Son and Friends. Citizen Payne, K Son, Eric, the son of K, and. It's that time again. You caught us live again on a Wednesday evening. That's Chuck D&M, the old original version of Fight the Power. And that's what we're doing. We're still fighting the power here against the evil forces. And there was a Star Wars marathon on, was it Sunday or Saturday? And the evil forces remind me of the forces that we're dealing with right now. Anybody who hasn't been paying attention, you know what I'm talking about, or you should know what I'm talking about if you haven't been paying attention. And if you know what I'm talking about and you really don't know what I'm talking about, meaning that you're on the other side and you're with the evil empire, well, then I guess you don't care about what I'm talking about, huh? Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, watching Trump still trying to have people reverse the election. Turn things around, overturn the election, actually. He tweeted out, hashtag overturn. And in the news, it's been said in the news that he's been calling, you know, state legislators and governors and, you know, called Governor of Georgia, trying to get him to overturn the election, called, you know, other states trying to get them to overturn the election. And, it's part of what we've been saying on this show since the guy got elected, it was, certainly I've been saying, it's a silent coup. The guy put enough of his people in place to go along with him and his coup and to go along with taking over things, having his yes people in place. And you see, even until today, you have Republicans not willing to say that Joe Biden won the election. And willing to say that, you know, they want to say whatever Trump wants them to say and whatever is going to keep them in power. And by now, I'm sure it has been clear to some people that I don't think, at least for me, this country wasn't really created to be a democracy. Maybe they're trying to develop it into a democracy, this republic or whatever they want to call it, whatever made-up shit that they decided to call the society at the time that the founders, so-called founders, or I guess the people that were in power, the wealthy individuals that were in power at that time, whatever they decided to call it, and make it to be something that it's not. It's not. These people are about supremacy, doing what they say, having it the way they want it. They're not about democracy. They're about democracy for a couple of people, until they decide to change their mind, and it'll be about whatever they want it to be about. Because surely you wouldn't have people showing up to government officials' houses because they're just doing their job. I mean, talking about individuals who don't even have a clue about how this stuff works. They're just mad because it doesn't work out the way they want it to work out. And people, I hear people talking on the news about being surprised at this type of behavior or expressing surprise and shock. Why? This is America. Why express surprise and shock? Maybe the surprise and shock is expressed because it's still going on, or people are being made aware of it that weren't aware of it, meaning people who perhaps are not black, because if you're black, you're aware of it. You're aware of the BS that this country promotes. I mean, you got people showing up, these jackasses in Michigan, showing up to the Secretary of State's house because she ruled in a way, following the rules, that they don't want her to rule. You know, she's certifying the election, the results of the election. You got the people threatening people in, well, Michigan is all screwed up. I just saw an article, a news clip on one of the shows of a sister in the state house there that's been threatened. And the Republicans are sanctioning her because she took to Facebook and said, told the people, walk lightly. Basically, you know, I got soldiers out there too, so stop threatening people. Stop trying to intimidate me. That was the message she left. And the Republican legislature in the Michigan House decided to sanction her, the sister. And from what I understood on this article in this interview also, it didn't seem like the Democrats in the House, her caucus, really had her back. So it makes me wonder, really, is it about democracy or is it about supremacy of a certain group over another group? Because even though they're supposed to be on the two separate sides, there always seems to be some way that people that are supposed to be on our side kind of undermine our efforts a little bit. And maybe our objectives and our goals aren't exactly the same. So maybe that's why it seems like the very perfect example to me that comes to mind, and I'm going to bring the fellas in, is the nomination of the Secretary of Defense, retired General Lloyd Austin. Hasn't been retired for 7 years, so they don't want to waive his whatever waiver he would not need to receive. There are people who voted against it for the last guy, so obviously they can't turn around and vote for him to get the waiver when they voted for the waiver against Mattis, who was Trump's pick. That's when you're playing, you know, everything is fair, and we're all playing by the same set of rules. But Democrats, do you think Republicans would do the same thing? Do you really think that Republicans, even though they voted one way, would not totally go do a 180, and if it was one of their people, get one of someone that gave them the advantage, gave them the upper hand, do you think that they, I mean, we just saw it. We just saw Lindsey Graham and, Mitch, be taped saying one thing about confirming a Supreme Court justice or confirming an election when Trump got elected, and for this election saying the exact opposite. So why Democrats? I know we got to play by the rules and whatever, but it always seems to end up shooting us in the foot because we're playing by the rules in a game with individuals who don't recognize the rules. That's just one of the things I want to talk about before we get to our guests. I'm going to bring the fellas in here. Let's bring in Brother Byron Saunders this evening. What's up, Byron? How you doing?
My brother. You know, I'm down here in the cesspool where every day is like a smell that is so odiferous coming out of the Oval Office. They're going to need an exorcism once they get that clown out of there, but that's going to happen too. But I'm okay. You know, other than the spiking in the coronavirus death, we're up over 15 million by the end of this week, probably by Thursday night, Friday. We'll probably be at 300,000 people dead. That's just the facts. And we still got people who don't want to give stimulus money to those in need. You know, they're trying to whittle it down to $600 as opposed to $1,200. You mean, come on, Mitch McConnell, your take home should be restricted, okay? All these GOP sycophants who are out there playing this political game and posturing is the condemning of the 15 million people who are infected. And by the way, that's 15,405,920, which means we'll be at 16 million by Friday. So how are you going to sit there and talk about not supporting the civilians? Because primarily, I don't care what party you're in. I really don't care if you're independent, Republican, or Democrat. We've got a responsibility, men and women of Congress, Senate, governors, state legislatures, even the dog team that supersedes anything other than the five, maybe let's call it six core principles of why you're supposed to be in office. Not putting money in your pocket, but to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, give hope to the hopeless, and protect the planet. And if you're not doing any of those six things, you don't need to be in public service because you're a waste.
Oh, you said that's what you're supposed to be doing in public service?
That's what you're supposed to be doing. How about that? So we got people who want to build a wall, okay? They got folks who want to give more money to the military. What are you going to do?
But who says they're supposed to be taking care of that? That's the whole concept. Yeah, I mean, I want to. I'm looking to break out of. I'm going to jump Wayne in. But I'm looking to break out of the concept of public servants. I'm not break out of the concept because we that have a certain belief about what a public servant should be are looking at it from that perspective, and we're kind of limited in our perspective because the people that came up with the idea made that those the parameters. And so everybody that they tell the idea to, these are the rules of the game, these are the parameters, automatically hears that and says, okay, my mind is limited in this thinking. I think within these rules and parameters because that's what whoever told me were the rules of the game. The individual who tells us the rules of the game is making up his own rules, not even playing by those rules. That's not even the game he's playing. And so when I hear us saying, on our side saying, yeah, a public servant is supposed to be the person who looks out for the poor, yada, 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 is it really? Because clearly their version of being a public servant seems to be the opposite, seems to suggest taking care of myself and my friends and my public and those people that have a vested interest with me, and then only those that can exact some sort of revenge should I not live up to my end of the friendship or whatever.
Is it possible, Eric, that the version of our democracy is a belief in holding on to a concept of capitalism when we know for a fact that 240-some years this country's been in existence, capitalism is all about exploiting the labor force. It's about exploiting cheap labor, which is slavery essence, and that's what's gotten us in trouble right now because these Fortune 500 companies have exported all our jobs out to overseas cheap labor factories. That's the bigger problem, and of course we don't want to talk about that, but you know what? There's a silver lining, and we're going to – because I want to kind of prep our guests for tonight because they're doing something that's beneficial to making our communities safer, making our communities more business supportive of each other, because we've got to break down this system probably block by block, city by city, as it relates to how do we make sure our infrastructure survives and sustains the community that lives there.
All politics are local. Let's bring Wayne in real quick before we get your guests in. And get him into this discussion. Wayne, how you doing this evening? Wayne Gilman, legendary news man. What's going on?
Hanging in here.
COVID vaccines we're giving this week, Wayne.
Your description of Turtle Head Mitch, you know, I mean, I've every time I think of that and I see a caricature of his face, appropriate. I concur with everything that you all have said. I mean, the only thing is that I want to believe that, you know, I want to believe in a process of constituent services when it comes to electing somebody to uphold a certain standard that we are expected to uphold, you know, if you're seeking a career in that. And if you're not looking to do what you're supposed to do with respect to constituent services, then you need to step aside. And it's not even about being term limited. It's about leaving. Period, because you're not working in the interest of the people who have elected you. But right now, I mean, we're in utter chaos. I'm even thinking, even though Donald Duck said, and I'm at a point where I don't even want to call names, but the thing is, on the 14th, we have the Electoral College officially giving sanction to what happened on November 3rd
certifying.
And the outcome and all that. And he said that he was going to back off with this campaign that he started to say that there's no vote. And I mean that the vote was stolen and all that business. But I think it's ahead of himself now. He and the Republicans shamelessly are trying to create hysteria here, where you're going to have the Blues fighting the Reds pretty soon, and also supporting that agenda is right wing media. You know, there was a report today that upstart station network Newsmax had higher numbers than Fox because the vitriol on that station supports the agenda of what Donald Trump is doing. So even though you have back and forth between Lou Dobbs and Stephen Miller, you have some people who are of sound mind on Fox in the news department. I mean, I'm not talking about the Sean Hannitys, Judge Jeanine Pirros, the Laura Ingrams. I'm talking about people who basically are covering the news and know that there's a balance, know that all this nonsense is just what it is, nonsense. But, you know, the FCC at some point is going to have a realignment because the message is just being distorted, and the American electorate is so, I hate to say it, they're ignorant on one side, you know?
Well, and ignorant and racist.
Yeah, ignorant and racist.
Byron, now, I'm sorry, you want to finish your point, Wayne, but we're going to get to Byron's
guest. No, I mean, I know we're coming up against the clock here, and I don't want to, you know, prolong. I think you all have said it all.
Byron, so prep us on your guests. I see that I see your numbers calling in, guests, so we're going to get you in there. Give us a preparation, Byron.
Surely. What we have here is what is known as the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator, Inc. Now, we also know that there's three industries in the city of New York, in the New York area, that are probably our nation's most respected and quite frankly, the industry itself is billion-dollar industry. Those three industries, number one, of course, is the banking industry. It's our financial capital of not of the country, but of the world. The number two, we've got the entertainment industry because we've got all the cultural Broadway and television and, you know, everybody's got a station and a headquarters in New York City. But the third one is the fashion industry. Gentlemen, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry that all of a sudden, by way of COVID, as well as the entertainment industry, have been shut down. There's been no fashion show, no spring fashions, no winter fashions, no walkways. However, in our communities, there's an agency and organization which I happen to represent as a fund development consultant, but they're known as the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator. And two wonderful people who have been at the spearhead of this, who are my guests tonight, and they've been bringing on some other guests that will join us. But the two leaders are Maria Barraza and Rafael Romero. And this organization, believe it or not, is in the business of helping young entrepreneurs in the fashion industry, not as walkway models, but as businesses, engaging our communities, Latinos and African-American, young men and women who have been able to come through this program over the last 5 years, and they're succeeding. They're succeeding in creating industry and trade in our communities in what is also known as the fashion industry. And so I want to bring them on, Maria Barraza, who's the executive director. And
Maria is what, Byron? Which area code?
She's the executive director, and she's her number. The calling in. Let's see. You're probably
just
getting
the area
her
code.
Number. The area code is 917 or 212.
Okay. Let me go to Maria now.
So
let me see if we have Maria.
Yes.
We're opening your line. Is this Maria?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi, Maria. How are you?
Maria, I want you to meet my co-host Wayne Gelman and Eric Citizen Payne. So welcome to our program, Eric and Sons and friends, Wayne and Byron. And we're talking about the fashion industry. So, Maria, tell us about the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator, Inc., and why is it so important, and what are you doing that's so in the fashion industry in Brooklyn, New York City?
Yeah, well, thank you, and nice to meet you, everyone,
same
Wayne
here.
And Eric.
Thank you.
Yeah, our program is very unique because we take each business and very strategically work with them one-on-one with their individual challenges. So it's not, you know, a broad whitewash, you know, everything's the same for everybody, because they're all at a different phase of their business. They all have different products. And interestingly enough, they're not just young people. A lot of people come to us that are in their second or third career. One of our participants recently, she's 75 years old, and she wanted to realize her dream, and we helped her. So it's all phases of the business, whether they come to us for production help, for marketing, their presentations, which is very, very important, how to talk to buyers. You know, what is their jargon? What do they look for? So it's all phases from soup to nuts is how we help them. And if we don't have the answer, we make sure we get it for them.
Now, Maria, one of the things that I'm so interested in what you've been doing is that this was helped your sponsorship 5 years ago. Your organization is 5 years old. And tell us about how it got started, because you've got some very high-profile businesses that helped you create this incubation process and help it to grow. So tell us how it really got started.
Yeah, that is correct, Byron. And actually in 2014, a high-level executive at Macy's approached Raphael and I. We had known him for many, many years. I had done business with Macy's in my business successfully. And so he let us know about this program that they had initiated, three already across the country, of incubators that could help be a stepping stone to success in the very complicated fashion industry. And we thought it was very interesting. So he brought us down to the first incubator, which was in Philadelphia. And we met the executive director, which we're very close to. You know, throughout the years, we help each other. And, you know, we do field trips for their participants. And she helps our participants as well. And we have helped over then, you know, we started it, and in Brooklyn, we were supposed to be in a Macy's store, actually, and on Fulton Street, but they were under renovation. So Berkeley College, who was just blocks away, stepped forward as one of our sponsors as well, and they offered to house us. So then we also they help the participants in the metropolitan area, but in 2017, we also added a remote program, so we help businesses across the country as well, and actually across the world. We actually, over the summer, we were approached by a gentleman in Corsica, France, to help his business start.
So Maria, I want to ask one more question before opening up to Eric and Wayne. You've had a success over the last 5 years of helping these entrepreneurs through the fashion industry. The pandemic has shut you down in terms of the spring, winter, fall shows, but you're still succeeding. And why do you think that's happened? I know one of your sponsors, UPS,
yes,
granted you support over your program to help make masks. I mean, this is not just
correct,
your usual runway stuff. So talk a little bit about how you're surviving and what's going on with the pandemic with respect to the fashion industry in New York City, because it has to hurt. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and engaging in the sponsorships.
Yes, well, interestingly enough, in April, one of our suppliers and factories came to us. Actually, she sent out a mass email, and she said, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know whether I should do PPE to continue my factory to keep our people employed and to keep going. And I said, you know, I'll think about it. I'll let you know. That day, that afternoon, UPS approached and called me. And Jason Robinson said, oh, do you think the BFI is interested in producing masks for our employees? We have 20,000 just in the Northeast area. And I said, well, I think so. And I called Michelle right away at New York Embroidery, and I said, Michelle, guess what? So that kind of started her on the path. She's been open the whole time. You know, they've been very conscious of how they, you know, do things with, you know, social distancing, but, you know, it's kept them open. And, you know, the fashion shows, they're PR, but a lot of them do not result directly in sales. So the hard work of marketing, which, you know, we assist the participants in, that always goes on. And stores, you know, have been open, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag across the country, but, you know, there are stores that are still going, and also there's the online business that, mm-hmm. of course, has increased, although in the apparel business is a little bit more challenging. It's actually the lowest revenue in the online sales because, you know, the pieces have to fit, and that's a challenge in the return rate. But, you know, we've been helping them, and they've been succeeding. So they've just, you know, just kept on going.
Byron, may I just mention something? This is Rafael Romero, Director of Partnerships, Brooklyn Fashion Incubator. As a matter of fact, one of our participants, who we have with tonight, KG House of Fashion, is actually through our salesperson, because we have a salesperson for our participants that makes sales calls, COVID or no COVID, we find those stores that may be opening or may be opening with fewer hours. We've made some contacts for her in Washington, D.C., and she is beginning to look at doing some trunk shows as soon as it's feasible to do so.
Actually, the stores have committed to them. They're just waiting for, you know, kind of the green light to, you know, for everything to be kind of settled down so that she can have these trunk shows, which are imminent. They will happen probably, if not in December, early January. And they're just waiting for it to happen. So.
Now, guys, if I may, you said you have a couple other people that are part of your program that will be going calling in. Is that correct? I have someone from a 718 and a 617 number. So I'm going to go ahead and open our 718 and number as we can. Hey, this is a 718 number. How are you? This is Kay Sun and Friends, and welcome to the show. You want to talk about your experience with Rafael and Maria? Hello?
Yes, thank you. This is Karen, KG's House of Fashion. I just want to thank you for having me on your show along with Brooklyn Fashion Incubator. So, as Rafael just mentioned, I am the young lady who actually came out of the business world of finance. I've been there for 25 years plus and decided to change over into fashion, which was always what I wanted to do. So with that being said, when I met the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator team, they kind of walked me through not the business aspect so much, but the fashion industry itself and all of the things that I needed to get done. So I was very grateful for that learning experience with them. And as Rafael mentioned, I am getting ready to do some shows in 2021, trunk shows, with some of the lady politicians in Washington, D.C. So I'm very excited about that because my clothing line is dedicated to the businesswoman. I love dressing them up. I love having them being in beautiful suits. And I bring something a little different to them in regards to just a regular suit. It's not just your regular three-piece suit or two-piece suit. I bring a little flair because I have flair. So I'm just, like, very excited that I have the opportunity to work with them. And, yes, it is a very difficult time with COVID, but we will prevail. I will prevail for sure.
Karen, I have a question for you, Karen, because relative to your fashion, women have been elected to both Senate and House in overwhelming numbers. So we are about to see a focus change. It's really amazing that because the vice president is an African-American woman, we've got more people of color. Even in the Republican and the Democrat, women are coming into the halls of power. And it's looking like these trunk shows with these politicians, you're going to be the one who's making them look even more powerful than they are already. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And as an African-American woman myself, that's why I believe KG's House of Fashion will succeed. Because we are taking over, and I want to dress these women because it's a beautiful thing to see them always dressed up. You know, they're powerful women, and my clothing will give them the next level of confidence that they already have. I'm just enhancing it with my clothing line.
Karen, may I suggest that you where they can see your website, just so that if people are listening and they can browse now, is that okay?
My website is www.kghof, which is the initials of the company, which is KG's House of Fashion.
And it's .com, right?
.com, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to say good evening to everyone again. My name is Wayne Gilman. I'm among the co-hosts here on the Kay and Friends show. And I'm hearing, and forgive my ignorance because this is beyond my skill set here, a terminology being used. Is it a trunk or a trump?
Trunk show. it's like the back of your car.
Trunk, T-R-U-N-K. All right, because for some reason I'm hearing, you know, this it's a politically driven show, forgive us. And I want to say that...
It's a trunk show.
I get it. I just wanted to get clarity on that. You know, I'm from Brooklyn, and everyone from the People's Republic of Brooklyn who are doing well, I'm so happy to hear, especially in the midst of this pandemic that we're going through. But it seems like everyone's had to reinvent themselves to sustain business.
Absolutely.
Right. Is it very difficult getting funding or?
Go ahead, Maria.
This year it's interesting because, again, it's a mixed bag as this year has been. So there are some silver linings. You know, some of the SBA programs were very, very helpful. We helped navigate a lot of the businesses through them to see what to do. I actually developed some very good relationships actually with the SBA through all this and different grants that are available that I was unaware of, such as the STEP program, which assists businesses to export, paying for different things like marketing and any kind of cost that might be associated to do that, which exporting, I believe, is going to be ever more important as we go forward and to sustain a business and to grow a business.
All right. As you mentioned, these relief efforts that you're getting, because not everyone is qualified for the PPP. I'm a sole proprietor in a different area of work, and you know, it's very difficult. We're just watching, waiting for Congress to actually come to the awareness that we have a problem out here. But I just found out this past week, and I'm assuming since you all are in New York, all three of you, even though it seems to be a national effort, I don't know if you're aware of the New York Forward Funding Organization, something from out of Albany, under Cuomo's jurisdiction. And there's money available there.
Or have you?
I have you heard of it, okay. Yes. And so I don't know, Karen, have you heard of that?
I did hear of it, but I have not really researched to see what the qualifications are. One of the other organizations that I participate in made mention of it, but I have not looked further into it.
Yeah, I think you fit the criteria, all three of you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, let me bring in another.
One of the things that is encouraging, not just with Brooklyn Fashion Incubator, but other small businesses. We are the backbone of our cities. I mean, it's nice to have UPS and it's nice to have a Fortune 500 company support and help sustain some of our industries, but the small business is literally the one that's keeping the city open. The big businesses Macy's ain't open.
Hey, Byron.
Okay.
Hey, Byron,
I mean,
let me bring in another supporter of Brooklyn Fashion Initiative. That probably
yes.
can attest to that very concept. I think you guys have another supporter on. Is this 617? Or you're a member
yes.
of the Brooklyn
yes.
Fashion? Go ahead.
Yes, we're looking to hear from another one of the success stories, and that's Keisha Gray Greaves, who is a MS muscular dystrophy sufferer, but she's made her business into Girls Chronically Rock. And so please welcome Keisha Greaves, because this is an amazing story, guys, that the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator, Inc. has helped and assisted. So
hello,
is that
Keisha.
You, Keisha?
Hi, yes, I am here. Good evening. Thank you so much for that introduction. So, yes,
well,
I am Keisha Greaves. I am from
yes.
not-so-fashion city, Boston, Massachusetts, and I am the founder of Girls Chronically Rock.
So what is Girls Chronically Rock, Keisha? Tell us what you do that's so special.
Sure. So Girls Chronically Rock is a clothing brand I started in around 2017. And the inspiration came from because I was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy in 2010 when I was actually in graduate school. But I always had a passion for fashion. I got my degree in fashion design and merchandising from Framingham State. But, of course, as you know, life happens. So, of course, when I was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy, I'm like, you know, what does my future hold? What is going to happen? So that totally could have put a damper on things. But, you know, I still take some time. And, you know, I'm like, I'm a true believer in certain things happen for a reason. So I thought maybe this is my way to, you know, bring my fashion awareness and talent and skills and kind of use my journey and platform to bring awareness to the disability community, but then to also share, you know, the things I was dealing with, you know, during that journey of being diagnosed and still dealing with, you know, through my lines. So Girls Chronically
yes.
Rock right now consists of T-shirts with different inspirational quotes that are meaningful to me and what I like to express, you know, especially with everything going on now, like the Black Lives Matter movement. I also have a T-shirt that says Black Disabled Lives Matter because I feel like that's important. Here I am as someone with a disability and also someone as an African-American. So, yeah, I'm looking to just build Girls Chronically Rock empire. Right now you can find some of my things in the Forum store, Beta, in Hudson Yards. And then hopefully by next year, 2021, I am looking to come out with an adaptive swimwear clothing collection.
Excellent.
That's fantastic.
I mean, congratulations,
right.
Keisha.
Right.
Thank you.
So with Maria and Raphael, with Keisha and Karen having been success stories, this is this year you have coming up next Wednesday, the 16th, your fifth anniversary and this 2020 virtual fundraiser. Now, tell us a little bit about that because you're still moving ahead with programs and projects and your business to keep moving forward. So in this virtual world, tell us about what you're about to engage in next Wednesday on the 16th. Of December, and tell people how they can help support and help sustain small businesses like what you're doing in the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator, Inc.
Yes, by all means, please visit thebrooklynfashionincubator.org. That's thebrooklynfashionincubator.org. That's our website, and there you'll see pop that will take you to Eventbrite. And usually we host our fundraiser in May, but this year we could not as a live event. We used to do it in Soho at a partner company called Flying Solo that does similar work that we do, but they do it for profit. We are a non-for-profit 501c3. So,
yes, and they concentrate more on the PR and it's a retail collaborative destination, a wonderful place, very elegant. And that's actually KG House of Fashion was with them where she got a lot of publicity with the British Vogue and also the Billboard board on Times Square.
And but next week, if you please visit thebrooklynfashionincubator.org, you'll be directed to Eventbrite, and there's a donation of $75, but that comes with a virtual goodie bag with a lot of percent off coupons to a lot of good places, including Trader Joe's and other value that will probably exceed the $75 that will be donated from partners that will donate in kind for the event. And it's a 40-minute program that acquaints the audience with the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator and the mission, mentoring young businesses in the fashion industry. We celebrate those who have gone through the program, and we applaud those now in the program, such as Girls Chronically Rock and KG House of Fashion. And very importantly, we will have someone by the name of Regina Kravitz, who built her company back in the 80s and 90s, and she'll talk about how she built it. But very importantly, the donation next week helps us move to the New York City Economic Development Made in New York, MINY. It's an ecosystem destination at Bush Terminal in Sunset Park, Brooklyn. So with the future in mind, we're planning to have a larger physical space where participants will actually have, you know, their own studio space, and there will be technology to help with streamlining their production processes. And so that's in the future, and this event will help us get there. And we've also set up a GoFundMe page that will be working all year long as well to that end to secure our new home at Made in New York in Sunset Park. So we truly appreciate your giving us time to get this word out and continue our mission. We, after 30 years growing our own fashion business, in the fashion business, we're very energized by sort of living it all over again with so many new young brands. It's wonderful.
Now, Raphael, I understand you're going to be honoring the successes of BFI graduates, in particular Noreen Medes, a founder of Mon Petit, who services infant clothes. I mean, this is really big business because kids grow through clothes like they eat, the milk and the baby food, but clothes is a huge business for young babies. And this is a young woman, African-American, whose business is called Patika, the Little Hearts. And then you have Angelique Torlongu, I believe that's how she pronounces her name. She's
correct.
From South Beach Furs. So this is the furrier industry. And then you have Eleonora Ferragana, who's founder of Art by Nora. And her work is reproducing art from canvas to the fashion design fabric, which is it's like wearing fine art.
Correct. Yes. And I just wanted to mention about Angelique Torlon. South Beach Furs is actually not furs. Her clothing and accessories are made from sustainably obtained feathers, which is really fascinating.
Wow.
And she has a very interesting story as well, because she lived, and that's why it's called South Beach, because she started her business actually in Miami. And
okay.
she actually because couldn't find a factory in Miami to help produce her clothing. She actually did a collaboration with a woman's prison, and she taught these women how to make this clothing. And what happened is not only did she get her production, but when these women left the prison, they were enabled to get a sustainable job.
Wow.
And
that's fantastic.
As I understand, via a grant by the state of Florida, that she was able to parlay that way. And she's originally from Brooklyn, and she's come back to Brooklyn.
And, yes, actually, when she began with the BFI, we were connected to her through a colleague, and she said, you know, I want to move back to New York because I think that's the place where I can expand my business, and I need to be there. So she moved back. We helped her actually get kind of situated into the garment industry and with factories and suppliers, and actually through Fashion Week Brooklyn, which is another amazing organization in Brooklyn that Rick Davey, the founder who started 14 years ago, he started this, his foundation to highlight businesses mainly in Brooklyn through PR. So fashion shows, and he does this twice a year, and also any kind of event that may showcase emerging designers in Brooklyn. It's really great. And he showcased actually South Beach Furs, and also connected her to a factory that actually started a partnership with her, because they had their own line in lingerie. And so it was perfect because they were able to make her production, but also it put new life into what they were doing with the adornment of the sustainable feathers. And actually she got into opening ceremony that way. And so she's had a very, very good relationship with opening ceremony, you know, who was a chain, you know, of stores, very high end in the metropolitan area. And she still has that association today with them, and they do very, very well with her clothing.
And Byron, very importantly, even when the participants leave, we're always available for them to check back in with us and ask us anything, issue that they might be having or a new direction or a new line. We're always available for us to, you know, continue assisting, even though they've left the program.
Momo Kerr
came back after her first year, and she said, you know, this has been so helpful, I'd like to continue for a second year. And
yeah, she was a designer in residence and not a remote participant. Different
when
program.
We had our physical space at Berklee College. She's quite a lady. We've helped her take it from just the concept to now she's set up a little warehouse in her house, and she's a single mother with two kids, and one of them is at NYU, and so it's a really great story. She's a terrific lady.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm really encouraged by, Wayne and Eric, is that in our communities, we call them the mom-and-pop businesses, but these are the businesses that need that sustainable support. Like we had Cyber Monday last week, and of course Small Business Saturday this past weekend after Black Friday. But these businesses are not getting the federal support, but they are sustaining. How are we going to keep our industries alive, and especially in an area of our arts? Fashion business is huge. And
that's
you
right.
See a lot of these main stores are closing down, but it's the little stores like this that are still opening their doors. And look what they're doing. The Small Business Administration does not incubate businesses like this. This is a niche business, and Lord knows we love to look good in clothes. Okay,
that's right.
It's no doubt.
Well, that's
a subject by itself.
That's a subject for that's a whole other show that we could do that on. But we want to take the time to thank you guys from the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator. Calling and letting us get insight to the fantastic work you guys are doing there. And Karen, I believe, and Keisha, a couple of examples, obviously two of the many examples of people that are benefiting. I particularly like the fact that people get second careers, and it's not limited to just the young as we get up there a little bit older. So for me, I was really happy to hear that you guys are doing that type of work. So I want to thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you. We look forward to joining us.
Now, what's the contact information again? What, Maria, contact information one more time for people interested in the fundraiser next week and just for the business of let's bring in some new folks who are interested in incubating their own entrepreneurial business with you.
If in the fashion business, just visit thebrooklynfashionincubator.org and contact us.
All right. Okay.
Thank
Maria.
All right.
Raphael, Karen, Keisha, God bless you and keep up the good work, folks. We'll talk later.
Thank you for having
you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Good to see you all.
Wow. Guys, you see, there is a silver lining through all of this, and we have got to make sure we keep in touch with those persons like Maria and Raphael and Keisha and Karen and all those who are they're the small businesses who are helping sustain our communities in corporate America. We got to make
sure
they stay alive.
That's right.
They say
all politics is local, but all businesses and all dollars circulating in a community are local, and we want to go back to having those dollars circulate in the community 6, 7, 15, 20 times before it leaves the community. So programs like that are really good. You know, before we jump off, you know, I forgot to say earlier, we got about another 7, 8 minutes. You know, the first COVID vaccines were given this week, yesterday.
Yep.
We'll see what happens, you know. I mean, they had some old folks. They had a couple of people that had allergic reactions, but they were allergic to a number of things, apparently. And the other big thing for me is, I don't know if you guys are going to take the vaccine. I guess we all would eventually have to take it. But we have a potential black Secretary of Defense that's been nominated by the President-elect, General Lloyd Austin. And I think that, you know, at the beginning of the show, we started talking about democracy and playing by the rules and, you know, not wanting to go back on something that you already established. But, you know, this is an opportunity for me, at least the way I see it, that we have a brother to be Secretary of Defense for the first time in history. And to me, that would be something that would supersede some of the other reservations about, you know, wanting to have a civilian as head of the Secretary of Defense. I think that an African-American brings probably a little bit more of a civilian-esque perspective to that position. I don't know how you guys feel in these last five, six minutes, but
I happen to agree. I mean, it's 70 years, almost 70 years after the integration of the United States military. You know, I mean, we were very proud with Colin Powell, who's endorsed Austin's pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, I mean, I really don't understand the scuttlebutt.
Color.
well, even from people in our own party.
And one factor only. Yes. Race is the overlying regret. It's the GOP's pandemic. They engaged it. They helped to create this race issue. Now they got to deal with it. And guess what? Biden's administration is going to be reflective of more of the diversity of this country. They better get used to it. And if they don't, sorry for them, because it's more coming. The reality is that there are more people of color in this country than there are Caucasians. And that point is being made very, very clear. at the voting
polls. Say there's 40%. So they say there's 40%, upwards of 40% brown and black and brown in the military. I mean, I understand some people who said I voted against it when Trump tried to do it with Mattis, that we shouldn't give him a waiver, and so I'm going to stick to that. They don't want to appear to be going back on their word or being double standard, double-minded. I mean, but politics sometimes forces us to rethink those things. People can merely say, I changed my mind. Clearly, that's what Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham decided to do when they talked about acknowledging the election results being final of a presidential election. They were talking about, you know, if presidential election results are final, we shouldn't, you know, try to dispute them when Trump got elected. But now that Joe Biden's elected, they're talking about that. So clearly, a lot of those individuals were able to change their mind. So I'm sure that some of the Democrats, you know, might want to think about changing their mind in this particular circumstance. And that's what I was talking about earlier when I was saying, you know, this whole kind of the parameters of the rules of engagement, so to speak, pardon the pun, that people that we interact with in the society have been established by someone who just that made up the rules. And when they decide not to play by the rules, they decide not to. And all you got to do is see the behavior that the Republicans are doing, fueled by the president. And so with this particular instance, I would like to see that this black man have the opportunity to get in and serve, and all of these people who are so want to stick to their word. And, you know, I mean, you know, eventually, I guess what I'm saying is you got to see how the game's being played. Later, for what someone tells you, the rules, if you know, like I always say, the honor system only works if you got honorable people within the system. If nobody's going to be honorable,
amen.
Then there's no reason for you to be the only honorable one standing there looking like a sucker, you know?
Right, exactly.
So,
but I like the way he came off with his opening remarks, the general, the retired general,
absolutely,
by the way, 4 years retired, that he acknowledged his journey and the path laid for him by those who served before him. That's what history is teaching us. You give honor and praise to the Tuskegee Airmen. You give honor and praise to the generals and William O. Flattery, I can't think of his name, the first graduate from West Point. We have to start acknowledging our participation in this American democracy. We helped build it. We planted it. We have serviced it. We fought for it. And we deserve to be honored for it. This is honor. That's what this is all about.
Right about that.
So we take it to the next level, guys. I mean, listen, I think what we're about to see, because I heard it from one of the talking heads, it's like Mitch McConnell and the GOP are in big trouble, not just because of Trump, but because they played this hand. Trump was their puppet. This is all on Mitch McConnell. Trump is done. He's toast. So why are we not getting a stimulus package right now? It's Mitch McConnell, the GOP.
Oh.
Trump is not in the way. The votes are already there to override a veto on the defense bill. So what are you telling me? You can't pass a stimulus bill? Uh-uh. I'm not buying it. And Trump and Mitch McConnell, you're about to get mowed over and moved out of the way. So if you
on
board, get on
From
board.
From your lips
not,
to God's ears,
about to move
Byron.
You out.
You know,
this guy
set us back.
Yeah, he did.
All right, we got 90 seconds. Put your last word in.
Last month, Georgia didn't believe it could turn blue. We did it. Now finish the contest. Vote January 5th like your life depends upon it, because we need to give the power back to the people. Peace and love always.
All right, there it is, Brother Byron Saunders. We'll talk to you again. Brother Wayne Gilman, give the folks your sign-off there, my brother.
Keep the faith, baby. Just Adam, like what Adam said. Got to keep the faith.
Oh, there it is. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Wayne, we'll talk to you again, Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman, Brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. Our thanks to our special guests this evening, Maria Raphael from the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator, as well as their, proteges or students, not students, but members of the program,
people that have gone through the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator Program and are doing extremely well, as you heard. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to sit down with us and listen to us. I'm Eric Citizen Payne, Kay's son. Those are our friends. We'll talk to you again soon. Keep your eyes on the prize, because the struggle definitely continues. It's Wu-Tang.
The hard-headed never learn. This my testament to those burn. Play my position in the game of life, standing.